Welcome to the Reminger Report podcast on emerging technologies. Reminger Co. LPA is a full-service law firm with over 150 lawyers spread across 14 offices and serving states throughout the Midwest. My name is Zach Pyers, and I'm a partner in Reminger's Columbus, Ohio office.
And I'm Kenton Steele, an associate in Reminger's Columbus office.
This podcast on emerging technologies will examine how changes in technology and business models affect our daily lives and how the law is adapting to respond to these changes.
On today's episode of the Reminger Report Emerging Technologies podcast, we'll be continuing our discussion with Karen Mowry regarding how regulations that are put in place to regulate how transportation network companies operate, how those came to be, and what the purpose and effect of some of those regulations are. Karen, could you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. I'm Karen Mowry, and I'm an attorney with the law firm of Eckert, Seaman, Sharon, and Malott, and I'm based in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania office.
And for our returning listeners, they'll know that you were also our special guest who joined us on our last episode of this podcast, and we discussed your involvement in the Pennsylvania process of the first set of regulations for transportation network companies that were put in place in that state, and some of the concerns that were at the forefront of the minds of those regulators at the time they were putting that first set of rules together. And I'd like to continue that discussion with you today and dive into some of the other concerns that were at play. One of the things that we've touched on in the past on this podcast is the way that consumer demand plays into the way in which emerging technologies are considered by the law and the way that they're regulated. Can you tell us a little bit about what impact consumer demand had on the promulgation of TNC regulations?
Sure. Because as has been pretty well disseminated across the country that as TNCs entered markets without licenses or without any legal authority to operate, regulators tended to want to shut them down and drive them out of their jurisdictions. But by the time the regulators caught up to them and made their official statements and started enforcement actions, the consumers had already gotten a glimpse of what TNC could mean to them, what TNC services could mean to them. And so they responded pretty loud and clear that to local elected officials, to regulators, that they wanted access to TNC service. They realized from their even just limited experience that TNCs offered them the ability to easily arrange transportation through an app, be aware of when to expect that driver to arrive, and then to be able to pay through the app. So especially in areas that didn't have adequate or reliable taxi cab service, this was a whole new framework for consumers that they just didn't want to lose out on. So they urged the legislators and the regulators to let them stay, either exempt them from regulation or give them the authority they need to operate. And they also heard pleas from consumers that they lightly regulate TNCs. You don't have to regulate them the way you do taxi cab companies. And the message was the same from consumers as it really was from the TNCs, and that is, let competition work. Instead of placing onerous regulations on these TNCs, rely on us, rely on the consumers. We're going to let them know when they're not giving us what we want, and we're going to demand it, and it'll be up to them to respond and do what we've asked for if they want to stay in business and be successful.
And can you tell us about how the role that consumer demand for ride-sharing services, how that was different than with respect to other industries that are subject to regulation?
For me, because of such a lengthy career in PUC, at PUC, and even litigating before the PUC. I really look at it from the perspective of a regulatory utility commission, and the industries that they traditionally and typically regulate provide essential services like electricity, natural gas, water. And we don't find individual consumers necessarily being very vocal in PUC proceedings unless there's some particular issue that they're having with their utility service, or maybe a poor quality of water, or that they're aware that this is an extremely large proposed rate increase that they want to weigh in on. But they are represented, you know, their interests in general are represented by government entities like the Office of Consumer Advocate. So although the consumers might go out to a public input hearing and weigh in against a proposed rate increase, they're mostly relying on those government entities. And even when they do participate, the regulator certainly, you know, considers their concerns, but at the end, the decision has to be based on longstanding legal principles of what are the utility's financial needs so that it can stay viable and keep providing these services. And you'll also see individual consumers filing complaints, you know, against utilities. But I think that what I see is that almost any time that consumers are participating in utility matters for other industries, it's really specific to one particular utility. It's not about, you know, a whole industry or a new service that they want to access. And one area where there is somewhat of an exception to that is when states are looking to open up energy markets to choice. You will see consumers kind of as a group, you know, express an interest in being able to choose the supplier that provides their electricity or natural gas. But even then, they haven't experienced this new alternative yet. So they're maybe not quite as vocal or passionate as consumers who have, you know, already experienced TNCs. And I'm certainly not aware of any situations where consumers have urged regulators to take a more light-handed approach in regulating an industry as they were with TNCs.
And that's certainly one of the interesting and unique things about TNCs, and is one of the frequent themes that we talk about, is how society and the law responds when these new technologies come up and are introduced for public use. One of the other frequent themes that we see again and again when we're talking about emerging technologies is a tension between what the prior framework was for how things were done versus the sort of disruption, which is the frequently used term, that the new technology is bringing to the table. So on that topic, can you tell us a little bit about what the response was from the taxi cab industry to the introduction of TNCs and TNC regulations?
The taxi cab industry was very resistant to the whole idea of TNCs entering their markets. They had been regulated for over a century, and they had gone through a lengthy application process where they had to show very specific public needs for their proposed service. And once they got their authority to operate, it wasn't even just TNCs that they wanted to keep out. They wanted to keep all competitors out of their little market. So, until fairly recently, the regulatory framework in Pennsylvania actually allowed existing carriers to protest the entry of a new carrier based on the adverse impact it might have on their business. So they were accustomed to you know, challenging any carrier who wanted to come in and compete against them. So when they saw TNCs entering markets and they saw them offering so many features that were attractive to consumers, and they saw how the consumers were reacting to them, they protested their applications, perhaps even, you know, probably more vehemently than they had each other. And the one common theme that we heard from them is to hold TNCs to the same requirements and standards as are applicable to taxi cabs. And that went from getting into a market, entering it, and to operating in it. They thought that they should have the same, you know, regulations imposed on them.
And obviously there ended up being some differences between those two industries. Let's talk a little bit about those. And what are some of the differences you've seen in the way that TNC fares are regulated versus taxicab fares?
Taxicab fares have traditionally needed the approval of the regulator. They have to get the fares approved. They have to have them on file with the PUC. They need to post them in their vehicle, and they're required to charge the passenger exactly the rate that's been approved by the PUC. It can't be higher or lower. It has to be what's on file. And the TNCs were explaining to the regulators that model just couldn't be applied to them because their fares are going to vary all the time. And that's because the pricing method that they use is based on supply and demand. And that's to make sure that they are able to keep enough drivers on the road and busy, you know, to respond to the passengers who need transportation. And then there's another concept that the TNCs rely on that taxi cabs would have never been permitted to do, is something called surge or dynamic pricing. And that's when there's a temporary need for increased transportation, like after a sporting event or concert or during a sudden downpour. And I do hear people say, even my friends say, that TNCs really take advantage of people in those times because they know they'll pay it because it's a sporting event or a severe weather event. And I always tell them it's not that they're taking advantage of it. What they're doing is they're setting a price that incentivizes their drivers to get out there on the road and transport people where they want to go. The TNCs don't schedule the drivers to work on shifts the way a taxi cab company would. So using this supply and demand method, it is an effective way that they can ensure that the supply meets the demand. And, you know, if it's a really congested post sporting event area, a driver needs to be offered some incentive to be willing to come out of his house and go out there and drive people around. And so they just keep adjusting it upwards until they find, you know, enough drivers out there to do it. Now, there are some states that put limitations on the amount that it can go up, like say a percent or whatever, that it can go up during, say, a state of disaster or emergency. But the TNCs, you know, obviously were able to convince the regulators and the legislators that they needed this flexibility. So what the regulators demanded in exchange was that there be transparency, so that you as TNCs, you have to let the consumers know what the applicable rate is up front. Give them an advance notice that it's going to be a surge price, and maybe they want to go back in the bar for an hour and wait it out till the surge comes down. And then if they want an estimate, you know, they request an estimate, you have to give it to them. And then at the end of the trip, you need to provide receipts that show, you know, that are transparent and show exactly what the consumer paid for.
And continuing on that topic, are there other big differences that you see in how these two industries are regulated?
Yes, in recent years, really almost since the TNCs came in to the markets, some of the more stringent requirements that had previously been placed on taxi cabs have been eased a bit, and it's largely been in response to their pressure on legislators and regulators to make sure they're able to compete with TNCs and really be on a level playing field with them. Because if they have this way more burdensome regulatory framework, it's going to be hard for them in a cost-effective way, you know, provide transportation services to the public. So just kind of looking at the two sides, when you have traditional passenger carriers, as I mentioned, it's a it's still a pretty lengthy application process if you receive protests. And you're not allowed anymore as an existing carrier to file an anti-competitive protest, but there are lots of ways that you're not able to say, oh, this would harm my business, but there are a lot of ways to file protests that aren't quite that blatant. You know, you can raise concerns about the carrier's fitness. And also on the traditional taxicab side, you have limitations on the service territories. Like they can only operate, say, in a 5-county area, and their rates are still regulated. So then on the other side, with the ride-sharing companies, you have they need an expedited application process. They can't wait for a year and a half. I mean, that's just not going to work for them. And you have to be willing to rely on competition as improving the services. And they obviously need statewide authority. They can't be, you know, limited to just a few counties. And you can't regulate our rates. We need to use our supply and demand approach. Some of the areas, so some of the traditional areas where the regulators really backed down from their traditional framework is they did agree that the TNCs didn't have to own or control the vehicles. They didn't have to control the drivers. They didn't have to show this public need for the service. They heard that from the consumers, and they didn't have to break it down by service territory. But they kind of, what they didn't give in on were the basics, like the drivers need to be vetted, vehicles need to be safe, and the insurance has to be adequate. One final observation I have is that despite the differences in the way that they're regulated and the very loud protests of the taxi cabs, it doesn't appear that there's been quite as much impact on their businesses as they were concerned there would be. It's a fact that some people just prefer traditional taxi cab service. That's one great reason, I think. And the other is that taxi cabs in a lot of areas have stepped up their game so that they're using apps and they're improving their vehicles and their overall customer service. So I think that in a lot of the parts of the country, the riding public has access to innovative transportation solutions that probably wouldn't have been developed without the advent of the ride-sharing industry.
Well, thank you for that, Karen, and I want to thank our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Remminger Report podcast on emerging technologies. Please join us for our next episode, where we'll continue our discussion on regulatory issues affecting ride-sharing and cover more of the general areas where ride-sharing regulations are put in place and what those regulations look like in their effect.